Throughout the early childhood years, there are opportunities for every child's potential to blossom and for a lifelong love of learning to begin. Welcome to Lilio. Our solutions for center management, family engagement, teaching and learning, and professional development have impacted countless educators, children, and families. We stand as a symbol of quality and commitment to early childhood education, with the belief that early educators have the power to change children's lives and ultimately the world. Lilio, the building blocks for high-quality childcare. Learn more at www.lilio.com.
Hey everyone, it's David Duchovny. Do you ever feel like a failure? Trust me, I get it. Hell, I've spent my whole life almost feeling like a failure. It's appropriate, though, because on Fail Better, my new podcast with Lemonada Media, exploring the world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives, is the whole point. Each week, I'll chat with artists, athletes, actors, and experts about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, I hope we can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out on May 7th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
I'm Kiki Monique, and this is I'm Sorry, your weekly dose of pop culture, celebrity missteps, and public apologies. And this week, I wish I was a cat because I just want to sleep and lay belly up in a sun-drenched window.
Wow.
And I'm Mohamed El Sheikhi, and this week, it's hot as hell in New York City, and I hate it so much.
It's too cold. It's too hot. I get that. And my name is Oha Lopez, and this week I hung out for 5 hours with three 19-year-old freestyle rappers in a hair salon, and I had the single best time of my life.
Why? They were just in the hair salon? Yeah.
Yeah, I got invited to be on this like cool podcast and all in Spanish here in Chicago. And this lady, she just had like an entourage, essentially, like the podcast host. And there were literally 9 to 10 people there recording this podcast. And amongst those 9 to 10 people, there were three 19-year-old rappers that are her proteges. It's like she's a manager of different, like, young artists, Venezuelan artists.
Okay.
And they were really good, you guys. My mind was blown.
Did they freestyle rap to you?
They did. They freestyle rapped me. And then they were so good that then I started throwing crazy shit at them. So I was like, okay, now you're going to rap from the perspective of like a 75-year-old man who is like getting a boner for the first time in a decade, you know? And then they would like sit there and just freestyle rap from that point of view, from that character point of view. And then the other person would come in as a character and they'd rap battle each other as the characters that I told them to. It was so good.
Also, this is the most improv thing I've ever heard.
Yes, exactly. That is my culture. I will not be shamed.
No matter where you take Oha, she's going to make you do some improv in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't help it. It's in my nature. And I try to explain what improv was, and they're like, no, we like stand-up. We don't like improv. You know, because improv is sort of like the nerdy theater kid younger brother to like the cool bad boy stand-up brother. And
but why didn't you just tell them that freestylers are the improv of the rapper world?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. No, we talked about it a little bit, but okay. It was... they were so brilliant and so smart. And of course, I don't hang out with a lot of Venezuelan people often. So when I do get into like a circle of them and they're young, I was just like asking them like what the new slang was, like, because I know slang from when I was a teenager, but I haven't been in Venezuela for so long that that shit evolves and you don't know how it evolves. So they literally just spent all night just honestly humoring this ancient person that they had to hang out with.
In case I end up in Venezuela, like, what is a current popular slang term that I should know?
Sure. Okay, so I asked them, like, Okay, because we maybe smoked a little bit of weed, okay? And so we're smoking weed, and I was like, hey, so when I was growing up, if you had smoked weed and you were high, you would say that you were pegado, que estabas pegado. And pegado means you were kind of like, the literal translation is sort of like stuck or sticky, kind of. And so I was like, but now that you're a grown up and, you know, like, you're like, oh, not only can you just be high, but what happens when you're too high? You know, is there a word for when you're faded too? Like, we have all these words in English for being fucked up past beyond where you should be. And I was like, do you guys have a word? And he said, oh yeah, it's palideando. So that is for when you're too fucking high on whatever drug it is that you're on. And the translation means to go pale, but in an infinitive verb. So like as if you were running or screaming or crying, palideando means to be pale in a kind of verb kind of way. Isn't that so strange and weird?
Palideando?
Palideando.
Palideando.
Palideando. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I also love that when you said smoked weed, you whispered it as if Joe Biden listened to this podcast.
I have this like very like conservative, because like you grew up in the early 2000s and late 90s and you're like, drugs kill and drugs are bad boys. And you're a bad girl if you do drugs. And I grew up very Catholic. And so I think I still have this like, I don't want to tell anybody that I partake, you know? But yeah, I mean, I haven't hung out with like really, really young people, like 19-year-olds like that since I guess maybe I was 19. But do you guys know young people, like very like young?
Well, so I mean, when I was in Portland State, I used to be like a professor's assistant. So like I would also work with these freshmen, you know, like every year. So I guess those are young people, very young people. And it was something. It was definitely an experience that I would not like to do anymore.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they were like always like nice to me and thought I was cool and everything. It's just the fact that like the stuff that they care about, the stuff that they worry about, I'm just like, bro, it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what about you, Kiki? Do you know any 19-year-olds that you hang with?
I mean, yeah, I don't would say 19-year-olds. I think that I know like a lot of, because I do become friends with a lot of like the online accounts that I like become mutuals with, like on TikTok or Instagram. And I say I probably trend on the older side, but like I hang out in like a tea world where there's a lot of younger accounts. So if we meet in real life, then I feel like, yes, I'm hanging out with like a much younger crowd. Yeah.
Also, if you are younger than 25, I have no idea how old you are.
It's so true.
Like, literally.
I drove by a high school the other day and I was like, I didn't look like that. They look like children.
Exactly. Yeah. Like you tell me you're like 18. You tell me you're 24, I'd believe it. I'm like, I have no idea how old you are. This can be anything, truly.
We would be the worst bouncers in America. We would just be like, yep, you look 21 to me, baby. Come on in.
Yeah.
Get your LSD on.
I've actually now I haven't been a real bouncer, but I like to
wait.
So I, for some reason, used to have this thing I did where I would sit at the front of bars, and I don't know, I guess my look, people automatically would just start handing their IDs to me if I was like sitting there, and I just would start doing it sometimes and pretend I was the bouncer because I would just like thought it was like funny. I'm weird like that.
Kiki, you just gave me a flash, like a memory that flooded my brain just now, where I have also done that and been a bouncer at the entrance of bars. But somebody did pay me to do it. Oh. But now I realize I have been a bouncer. We've both been bouncers, Mo.
No, I have not. I have not.
Damn it.
But speaking of bouncers, I was in San Francisco this weekend doing shows at the San Francisco Punchline. Great time. Had the best time of my life.
Ooh, it was okay, so much cool. Fun.
But on Wednesday and Thursday, there was a Dave Chappelle show
right
after. And the amount of security that they have for the show is insane. Like, they have, like, metal detectors and, like, you know.
Well, they
like,
have to now, right? I mean, he did get attacked by, like, a knife.
But I've heard that. I've heard that was just the thing always.
Okay.
But now it's more. But what's funny to me is I think he did not need all of that security for one reason, which is tickets for that show were $150.
Mm.
And I'm like, bro, no one is paying $150 to get kicked out. Like, if I paid $150 to see anyone, no matter how much I hated him, I will sit there and watch the whole thing.
But most importantly, did you get to meet Dave Chappelle?
Oh, good question.
No, I saw him, but I didn't stay for the show. Because it was so late. It starts so late, and it goes on for hours. For hours. First of all, there is no one in this world that I would want to listen to speak for 2 hours. Like, the most, I think a perfect show, is 90 minutes.
Okay.
See, and I was going to say 45. I was going to say a good 45-minute show, whether it's an improv show. Improv shows are better at 25, but 45 minutes for me of stand-up, and I'm like, this is good. I feel
like
done.
45 minutes of one person, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But like a 90-minute, like, you know, like you have an opener, you have a feature, and then maybe you have like someone
doing
a guest spot. And then you have the headliner talk for like 50 minutes to an hour. And that is perfect. It ends there.
Have you ever been at a show and then it's like a halftime or what's that called technically? Like a
intermission?
An intermission. And you're like, I wish it was over now. I wish this was it.
100%.
Every time there's an intermission in any show, it doesn't matter how good the show is. I'm like, I'm done. But then I have to go back in.
I think intermissions are just like... you know, God doesn't want that.
Like, God doesn't want intermissions.
Happen. Yeah, they shouldn't happen. Like, first of all, you killed the momentum of the show. If it's a comedy show, you just killed it. Now I have to start from the beginning and the host has to bring it back and all of that shit. And then people will take so long to come back from the bathroom, wherever the fuck they're doing. And they're like, you know, and whoever going first or like whatever is happening right after the intermission, like you're going to be on stage and people are like still walking in. I don't like that. So just keep it going. Just use the bathroom before the show, like a grown-up. Mm-hmm. Leave in the middle of the show and use the bathroom. Mm-hmm.
But you know what I do wish? I do wish movies had intermissions because I went and saw Top Gun this weekend. And
How was it?
Look,
so cheesy, but I love it. I mean, I love Top Gun.
No, I don't blame you. So yesterday I actually watched... rewatch the first movie.
Yeah,
and it's so funny.
It's so funny. It's so funny. And I didn't even realize that the Navy had paid, the military had paid $31 million to get that movie funded.
Yeah.
Because when that movie comes out, I mean, I definitely know recruitment after this new one is going to go up because, like, you know, you watch those planes and taking off and, like, even I want to be in the Air Force, which I'm still trying to figure out the branches. Like, why is the Navy and the Air Force combined? I don't know, but that's not for me to figure out.
Yeah, they both, you know, ride over water and they're like,
yeah. But, like, just the fact that, like, you know, I think I read somewhere where it's like they had to pay $11,364 an hour for these planes to be used in this movie. But, you know, it's just a cool movie to watch. But, you know, we were just sort of, we made it a girl's, you know, day. And anyways, the movie's 2 hours and 17 minutes, I think. And I kind of just wish, you know, because it's Alamo, so you're drinking and, you know, you kind of want just a little break to, like, you know, because you don't want to miss anything. But we were just saying that, you know, Tom definitely was, like, making sure he was in every part of this movie, even though, like, it didn't necessarily need to be about Tom. But you know what? I love Tom. I watch every single movie he does. So
Fun. I mean, like, here's the thing. He knows how to be a Hollywood movie star.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and that's all you can ask from him. Like, yes, are these movies, like, propaganda for the military? Is my taxes paying Tom Cruise to fly planes? Yes. That's exactly
the answer is yes.
What's happening. But you know what? At least, you know, there's so much like military propaganda. At least, you know, they made it fun for once. So.
They should consider this level of effective marketing in all areas of their life. But instead they do dumb shit, like open up a weird store in a strip mall and like stalk you as you walk through the Marshalls.
Oh yeah, exactly.
You've got potential, kid.
I know. It's so funny that that I've learned like recently that I can like join the military even though like I'm not a citizen or I'm still waiting for my green card.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro, you're like letting me die for this country but will not process my papers quick enough. What an insane what an insane world.
I was surprised to find out my friend, like, same situation, like, I think she has a green card, and it's like, she has to pay taxes, but she can't vote. And I was like, this feels, like, not equitable.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, man, I pay taxes, too, and everything, and I also deserve to have my vote not matter, you know?
Like, that's right.
As a New Yorker, deserve that. I want my ballot to go in the box and mean nothing. Exactly.
Yeah. I want to be disappointed too. I want to vote for someone and then, you know, end up with not my choice.
Or have a bad year and just be like, you know what? None of this matters. I'm not voting at all. Even just the possibility of thinking maybe I won't vote. The sheer gall of having the option and deciding not to. That is choice.
You know what? What I love, though, I think I've said it before, but like the thing about like not voting for me, like not being legally able to vote, is that I can always be on this fucking high horse, baby.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
I love a high horse. I love a high horse. I love it. I wish I could live off of a high horse.
Yeah.
The moral high ground is the club to be, baby.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. People are talking about the lessers of two evils and who to pick and all of that. I'm like, I don't even have to think about that. Whatever choice you make, I'll blame you for it. I pay taxes to do this. If I can't vote, I'll blame you for whatever the outcome is.
Oh, I do love that.
Throughout the early childhood years, there are opportunities for every child's potential to blossom, for curiosity to spark, and for a lifelong love of learning to begin. Welcome to Lilio. We develop innovative tools that revolutionize the connection between daycare centers and families and help empower educators, enabling them to nurture young minds and build strong bonds. Through our solutions for center management, family engagement, and teaching and learning, plus professional development through Lilio Academy, where educators can earn continuing education credits at their own pace, we've impacted countless educators, children, and families. We stand as a symbol of quality and commitment to early childhood education. With the belief that early childhood educators have the power to change children's lives and ultimately the world. Join us in nurturing the future. Welcome to Lilio, the building blocks for high quality childcare. Learn more at www.lilio.com.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people. And we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we have got to talk about this verdict. I mean, obviously, I have my thoughts, but, like, I have not heard from either of you. I need to know, like, what are you thinking now that you've heard the verdict?
Oh, my God. I mean, I guess the first thing that comes up is sort of, like, shit show, kind of. A lot of, like, why are we talking about this? This is a private conversation between two people in their bedroom in some ways. I don't know, Mo. You say first. You go first, Mo.
Well, I mean, my initial reaction is no, I'm not surprised. You know,
really?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I feel like after all of this, like, PR machine, and having, I assume the jury can read social media and like see it.
Well, not during deliberations. Like while they're on the stand, like they're not supposed to be on online at all.
Yeah, exactly. But how do you even like control that? When you go home, are you gonna like not look at what's happening online? I feel like it's a bit it's a bit impossible. But I mean, obviously we can't know that. We can't know that what kind of instructions they follow. I'm not surprised, but also like he got $15 million. Hopefully that is enough to pay for all of the PR he paid for. And did Amber Heard get like $2 million?
She was awarded $2 million and, you know, and Johnny was awarded $15 million, but that will actually be reduced to $10,350,000 because he was ordered $10 million on compensatory, I think is how you say it, and $5 million in punitive. But there is usually a like ceiling on how much you can award for punitive. And in Virginia, it's $350,000. So that $5 million will become $350,000. But her okay. $2 million is $2
million. I see. Yeah. I see.
Is it strange? But I think that the amount of money almost like gives us like a almost like a you're 70% to blame and you're 30% to blame. Like there's something about the amount of money that they each gave to the other person in this suit that almost like if you break down the money as a total and who has to give more money to who, that's almost like in my mind what the jury's sort of like apportioning of the blame over like how much abuse happened. Like that's kind of what's going across my mind, I guess. Or at least what they felt they could prove essentially. The thing that I'm most compelled or interested in hearing about is if they make statements. Have they made statements after
this?
They've
made statements. Yeah. They both made statements.
And I guess I haven't listened to the statement, but or to Depp's statement, but is there anything in there about the broader claim that this is a step back for women? Because I know that Amber Heard's statement included that, but we talked a little bit about like what their statements were going to be and kind of how they were going to sort of counterbalance each other. And I'm really, really curious if Johnny Depp's side of things at least includes a little bit of information about like, hey, we realize that abuse claims are real and that they should exist and that this is not, you know, that this is not something that's supposed to like minimize either thing. But I don't know. I mean, I think
his statement really was about clearing his name and, you know, 6 years of his life and the jury giving his life back, you know, and in the end, he says something about, you know, that I hope that my quest to have the truth be told will have helped other men or women who have found themselves in my situation and that those supporting them never give up. So I think that's the closest he sort of came to acknowledging that. But yeah, he doesn't really talk about that. And, I will say that I think, again, Amber tried to harp on the freedom of speech part in her statement.
Right,
was a little
right.
bit weird because, you know, we've talked about it on this pod, like how Americans use freedom of speech and they don't really use it correctly. And I don't think that this was a case to argue freedom of speech. Here's my thoughts. So, I mean, look, everything about this verdict, it makes me sad for so many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Do I believe that Johnny hit Amber? I think that, yes, I think that Johnny hit Amber. Do I believe Amber hit Johnny? Yes, I believe Amber hit Johnny. Do I think Amber exaggerated her claims? Yes, I think that Amber absolutely exaggerated her claims. Do I think that she might have exaggerated her claims because she thought people might not believe her? I also believe that. It's people, again, want me to have a side in that, but I believe all of these things to be true. And I think, I also believe, I agree with you, Mohanad. I find it hard to believe the jury didn't get influenced in any way. And not to say, you know, I don't have confirmation of that, but I find it would be really hard to go weeks and weeks without that. And if you were to see what was happening online and things that weren't being introduced into evidence, I could also see that.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, I think the result is one thing and their statements is one thing and how this is going to be used and how it's going to be perceived and how it's going to be covered is another thing. It's going to be, it doesn't matter what happened in trial today. It's what's going to be communicated to people is what people are going to get out of this. And I think so far, obviously, from what I see online, you know, like you have like, you have the people who are just like, you know, like are just like bystanders who are just like, oh, I like Johnny Depp. I like Amber Heard. This is my team. This is who I want to win. And it's just based on who you like more. And then you have like, you know, right-wing people who are just like, just fucking celebrating today in a way that just like, it they make it sound like this is the, you know, the trial of the century. And to them, it is. Because now they can, like, every time, like, a woman, like, would come out and, like, you know, accuses someone of something, they will use this as an example of, like, you know, women lying, whether, like, Amber was lying or not. And, you know, and I think that's, I mean, that was the goal from the beginning, you know, like, to make this into a, like, a huge cultural thing. And it will, I mean, it will make a shift in general. And I see a lot of people on the other side, like, especially, like, people, like, who were victims of, like, domestic abuse and all of that. And they're, like, basically they're saying, like, Amber Heard had, like, more evidence than I could ever present. And even her, she couldn't really do anything with it.
I mean, I think, look, I think that's, like, a very real reality. But I also think, you know, because of the exaggerations, because, again, I do believe there were exaggerations, Amber also just made this harder for every other woman who does have to prove that. And that part is the part that really stings with me, because I understand what it means to feel like not being heard, not being listened to, and feeling like maybe you do have to, like, go above and beyond or exaggerate in order for it to be taken seriously. I think this got, like, a wildfire out of control. I don't think she realized how far this was going to go. And then she sort of had to sit in that. And I think the biggest part was, because, again, whether you know, the physical abuse and the verbal abuse and the emotional abuse, I think, well, definitely the verbal and emotional, we can prove that, right? Like, that was in tapes, that was heard. We know that that happened. I think it was the sexual violence part that then turned people into, like, this feels a step too far. Because, you know, if you listen to the story in Australia and her retelling of it, that was when I think she lost a lot of people, because what was happening, what we were witnessing and what we were seeing in pictures, they weren't adding up. And so, again, I hate that. I hate that that happened. And I hate that she felt she needed to do that.
I think a scary part of, like, misogyny is the amount of, like, toxic results that this specific trial is producing in people. And I mean, in some ways, I'm like, what are we supposed to take away from this is mainly the biggest thing for me, is like, maybe even you don't exaggerate, maybe even you do a trial. But if something like this comes out and is public, that's what we know we can expect. And so that is so scary to me in terms of, like, of what we can expect from the public at large whenever we come out and say something like this. And the fact that women in general face a lot higher partner violence, like, there's something to be taken away from this that isn't just what occurred in the trial, but of what can happen to us when we actually voice the things that we want to voice and that we need to. And that, to me, I think is the saddest and scariest part in some ways, because we are routinely attacked online. We are, like, it's like mocked and ridiculed and targeted for abuse. And it's just, you know, it's another claimer of, like, it's not easy for women to come out and say these things when they do happen. And I hope that this doesn't take away.
I mean, this is, like, literally not the first example in the past 2 years. Or, I mean, the same exact thing happened when Brett Kavanaugh was being, like, you know, appointed for the Supreme Court.
Right.
And Dr. Ford, I believe, is, you know, the person who came out and said that, you know, he assaulted her and all of that. And she had to move houses. She had to, and he's fine. He has a, you know, he didn't have to move away. He didn't have to do anything. She's the one who suffered a lot of consequences. And, you know, yes, maybe, like, you know, the people did not treat her as bad as, like, you know, Amber Heard, obviously, but still there was a lot of consequences to her coming out and testifying and all of that stuff. And that is, you know, that is us talking about a man like Brett Kavanaugh, who's not even, like, liked that much, you know, just like a dude. So, you know, like, someone like, you know, with someone else like Johnny Depp or, like, whatever, like, someone who's, like, more likable, it's hard to take, like, you know, take these cases to court. And also, like, my other question is that has to do with this trial. Is there a reason why it was televised? Is that a usual thing in things like that?
It's not usual, and Amber's team definitely fought for that.
Yeah,
but the judge ruled she didn't find there was any reason they couldn't televise it.
Yeah.
I think for Johnny, it was a win, but definitely Amber was not interested in having to retell these things live. It was definitely, you know, again, and I think there was many reasons this happened in Virginia, right? I think in California, we don't get to see anything. I think because it's like this, like, high profile celebrity state, they don't, you know, we didn't get to see the Kardashian Black China defamation trial. We, you know, those sorts of things. So
I can't even imagine if you didn't want this televised and having it have to be televised. Like, that would blows my fucking mind.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's very interesting because, like, I feel like I'm not sure what the outcome of the trial was going to be if this was not televised, but I feel like it was going to be a whole different trial. Because this reminds me of something, and this is, like, you know, like, an interesting fact that I, like, learned recently. But, like, an example of that is, like, when John Kennedy was running against Nixon, you know, and, you know, they have, like, the presidential debates and all of that. And the people who listened to the debates on the radio would say, like, Nixon did, like, really well. He won this. But the people who watch on TV, I'm like, oh, you know, JFK did so well. He, like, he was so much better. So it's just, like, I feel like it's just, like, to see, like, how mediums of communication, like, affect how people perceive these things.
Because JFK was hot and Nixon
exactly.
was ugly.
And he's like, and he knows how to carry, like, but he also, like, knows how to carry himself on stage and, like, his movements and all of that. He looks more confident. He's, like, you know, he's more charismatic. And, you know, he's, like, you know, he's a Kennedy. And I feel like if this trial, like, if we were just, like, hearing about what was happening inside from the reporters and stuff like that, I feel like people's feelings would have been way more different. But, like, seeing it on TV and, like, you know, seeing beloved Johnny Depp just, like, sitting there, and you're like, you're not just seeing him, you're seeing all of the characters he played that you liked, and you're just, like, you know, projecting that into him. And now instead of becoming a trial, it's becoming into who's the hero and who's the villain. Like, this is, to me, this is another TV show. So I have to, like every other TV show, there has to be a villain and there has to be a hero. And you can't be like, well, they're both, you know, fucked up. There's, that doesn't exist.
No, people do not like you to live in the middle at all. They want you to definitely, it's good or evil. It's black or white.
Yeah. I bet you're getting a lot of that pressure online. How has it been covering it? Like, what have you been feeling in terms of, like, people messaging you or talking about in your social media? Like, what are you taking away from, I guess, your own coverage?
I think that, honestly, this case taught me to be, like, so much more unbiased in every other aspect of my life, because I truly did come into this case not having, I didn't follow the UK trial. I barely sort of remembered sort of what had happened even in 2016. Neither of them were on my radar, which makes sense because now we've learned, you know, they haven't had work in years, and obviously then COVID hit. And so I hadn't been thinking about them. So I literally came into this, like, just prepared to watch a trial. And I did. And I think it made me just be able to look at things with more of a nuanced perspective. Like, I'm able to look at something and say, like, okay, this is the evidence presented in me. What do I feel from this? And what do I see on the other side? And so I honestly think that's the biggest takeaway. But of course there's, like, always nagging at the back of my head of, like, but what if we got it wrong?
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, I got, you know, a lot of people will send me DMs, and it's very hard to confirm, right, whether these DMs are real, whether they're sending them to me just because they want me to post them, you know. But I got this one DM after the verdict was read about, from a lawyer who wanted to remain anonymous, who had worked on, she said she worked on a Johnny Depp case, like, 4 or 5 years prior, and had to review some emails attached to this case. And she said that, you know, in this case, in those emails, she saw that there was evidence that he had hit Amber. And, you know, and she was kind of wondering if the jury would see some of this, but like a lot of that evidence hadn't been entered because she thinks the communications went through the security guard who has now passed away. And again, I can't confirm this is whether it's true or not, but when you hear things like that, it just makes you feel like shit, you know, like what is all the stuff we're not seeing?
Yeah.
But that could go on both ways. What are the things that we're not seeing from Amber's side either? I mean, we just have to trust in what's been presented, and we have to just trust in the jury and the judicial system.
Yeah, which is known to be perfect, great,
like totally
never gotten anything wrong.
Right.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's just all crazy to me. I feel like. This also like says so much about the, you know, the legal system in this country, and like it could be much better than this. Like I feel like in a trial like this, where like you have like celebs and stuff, maybe a jury trial is not the way to go. Maybe it should just like be decided by a judge.
But that scares me too, because now that I've learned more about the judge appointing judge process, and especially when you have
that's
even much more political, right? I mean, there was a law just passed recently where the Supreme Court, again, I'm getting it wrong, but something about the Supreme Court is passing back to the states like the ability for people to appeal when they think something. Anyways, it basically unfavors blacks, minorities, and marginalized of any kind. And it's like when you hear stuff like that, you're like, shit.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? Like, you know, if a judge is in charge of everything and this judge has been appointed by somebody who does not have values like mine, well, what chance do I have in this world?
No, yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. It's just something about like me going to trial and they're like, it's going to be a jury of your peers. I'm like, bro, I don't trust my peers.
Right?
Like, you know, what are you even saying?
Yeah. These are the people that refuse to wear masks just so we can fucking go outside again.
Yeah,
I don't trust these motherfuckers.
I'm like, have you seen peers lately? Yeah. Like, I don't trust them with normal stuff, let alone the law.
Oh my God. I honestly would love to see a jury of all Kikis or all Mo's, though. That would make me really happy. Oh, just little clones of each other.
Oh my God.
Aww.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like a jury of my peers would be like, bro, can you repeat that again? I was on my phone this whole time. I was in my own head. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, guilty or not guilty. I mean, I don't know.
Feel? I couldn't even understand what you were saying with that surprise accent. So
yeah,
I don't care.
Exactly. Yeah. Eight Pisces deciding my fate? Absolutely not.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few, and of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And each week we are sitting down to talk all about life's twists, turns, and absurdities on The Deep Dive.
From exploring the depths of TikTok, which is our only news source, to navigating the complexities of grief and loss, we are just two best friends behind a mic processing life together.
This podcast is all about finding the silver linings in the madness. So get ready for unfiltered conversations about motherhood, careers, pop culture, and everything in between.
Here at The Deep Dive, we're all about community. We believe in the power of sharing experiences and the strength that comes from supporting one another. And we would love to have you with us.
So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
Like
Well, now we're going to move to our own apologies, like we do every week, which is, you know, sorry, not sorry. So we either apologize to someone or we ask for an apology. And like every week, I'm going to start with Oha.
Yes. I would like an apology from Netflix.com.
Okay.
I'm feeling really chaotic in my life. I depend on Netflix for a lot, you guys. I watch a lot of Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really don't know what's about to happen. I'm getting a lot of crosstalk online about whether or not they're about to charge me $2.99 for everybody who's on my account, which I'm not ready to ask people to Venmo me $2.99 monthly. I'm going to kick them off. So there's about four or five people in my life that need to be prepared for that, that if they... no longer, if they're charging me to add people to my account, I will have to change my password. And I love you deeply and dearly, but goodbye. And then the other thing is, what is about to happen? Are you going to do ads? Are you going to charge me $2.99? Is this changing? I do have some stock in Robinhood and Netflix, and I have actually actively lost $6 in the past month. So I need an apology from Netflix. I need you to get your shit together and be the decent, hardworking company that pivots on a dime that you have been in the past. And I hope that it gets issued. I hope that I get it. This is the one that I really want, essentially.
I get it. I would remove people. I'm like, I'm not paying more.
I'm not paying $2.99 for you. No.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no one that I care for that much. I'm like,
no.
Go watch your own show. Pay your own money. What are you spending that money, $11 on a month? Yeah. Just get a Netflix or don't watch TV. TV is not that important. Read a book.
That's right.
And I don't think, and I know you're hearing crosstalk, but I mean, I definitely think it's going to happen because, like, I mean, all I ever keep seeing now is like, Netflix losing money, you know, which I never believe. I whenever I hear about like companies that side losing money, I'm like, are you losing money? Or are you just not making as much money as you projected? Like, it's like only $6 billion instead of like $16 billion.
Is the trust of your shareholders what is actually causing you to lose money, but you're not actually losing money?
Yeah. Also, crazy idea to make more money on like a streaming service. Make good TV, Netflix. I don't know. Have you thought about that? Have you considered making good TV? Mm-hmm. Do you think that works? Maybe don't throw $60 million at one person and then cancel every good show there is.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, just spitballing here. I mean, what do I know? So Kiki, who owes you an apology this week?
I'm actually going to apologize to my physical therapist because I've been going to physical therapy for my back hurts. I'm trying to like rehab my back, get my core strength up. And I'll be honest, I have not moved much again because of this Johnny Amber trial. Like I've been pretty much in a sitting position for the last month. And even though this would be probably good opportunities, like I could be doing my exercises, I don't. And I know that I have a physical therapy appointment today and I did not do any of the, I lied. I said I did the exercises. I didn't do the exercises. I haven't done any of the exercises while I was home. And I know that I should just be apologizing to myself because only I will be suffering because of this. But, I'm going to apologize to him because today when I go in, it's not going to be, as good a session as maybe he thinks it's going to be because I'm going to be like, no. I hurt. We're gonna start from scratch.
Exactly.
Maybe we shouldn't have done this during the trial. We should have done it when I was a little more active.
Exactly. You should be like, why are you giving me homework too?
Yeah.
Like, you do it here, and then the second I go out, I'm gonna forget all about it. I'm not gonna do anything by myself. I do not self motivate.
This is why, like, I know if I was rich. Absolutely, a personal trainer would be on the payroll 7 days a week because I'll work out when somebody is there pushing me along the way. I'm very good at that. But like, even though I know all the things I'm supposed to do it on my own, I don't know. I can't get there.
You know, Kiki, what's the one thing I want if I was rich, truly?
What?
Is a personal chef. That's all
Yeah.
That's
absolutely.
I am dying to have a, like, that will literally change my life.
Personal chef, personal trainer, driver. Those are the three main payrolls. Those are the three things I want.
I'm trying to think of what I would do if I was very wealthy. And I'll just subscribe to what you guys are saying and trust that that would change my life and make it better. I'm like, oh, damn. I would, like, I don't know, go eat chicken nuggets for 2 days and, like, go travel to like go see a safari and get a hot tub on my roof. I would not be a good rich person, you guys. I would be bad at rich, rich.
Oh, you'd be the curse of the lotto person.
I would be the lotto curse.
That's so funny.
Within 3 years, I'd be dead, you know?
Broken dead.
Broken down, dead. And yep. So just know what to expect. Also, there is a very great thread on Reddit to what to do if you win the lottery. So just go on there and check it out. It's the greatest thread ever. And it truly is, I think, what to actually do if you won the lottery. Step number one, don't tell anyone. Not one soul. Not your mom, not your dad, not anybody. And then two, retain a lawyer.
Yeah.
That's your second one.
My friend and I have we lived in New York together. We knew where the office was, and we had a code word that when we call and we say that code word to each other, we know what it means. And then we meet because we'd play the lotto together. And then it was like, we had a whole plan. It was like,
wow.
I don't have an emergency action plan, but I sure have an emergency lotto plan.
Just go on Reddit, get that emergency lotto plan. Download that PDF, baby. Print it out. Keep it in your emergency kit, you know?
Truly, also, like, the telling your family thing, telling your parents that you have made any amount of significant amount of money is the worst thing to do.
Absolutely never do that.
Because they immediately, they're like, first thing thought in their mind, like, how does that benefit me and how much can I get? And it's just like, okay, let's just start with me here. And then we'll get to you.
We'll get to you.
Yeah.
We'll get to all of you. Listeners, I would give money to our listeners, too. I would throw some out there. Sorry, Mo.
No.
Just a dollar, you know?
You're so... I don't know. I don't think you know how podcasting works.
No, I pay them to listen. That's what I've always done.
Listeners money.
Yeah, that's why we have any listeners, because I've been directly...
Okay, listeners, if Oa gives you money, or if you have money... At Mahana Del Shaky, that's my Venmo.
Yeah.
Send me money. I will accept it.
Yes.
Send me money. Speaking of, so I'm demanding an apology this week. And I was, I've been flying a lot lately. And Jesus Christ, it's too much.
Flying, the airlines, what's
tired.
Too much?
I am so tired. I went to Montana, came back from Montana for like a day and a half, and then I went to San Francisco, and like a 6-hour flight, and then 3 days came back from San Francisco, and now in a day, now I'm going to Cleveland and then back. And there's so much happening. The airports do bad. LaGuardia, great job. It's becoming much better. Love the look, love everything.
That tiling is gorgeous. Jesus, yeah. It's beautiful.
Absolutely. So I'm demanding an apology from Delta Airlines, which I use a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have your card. I have everything. Delta, if you're listening, please. I took this 6-hour flight to San Francisco. And if I'd say like the coldest I've ever felt, it did not matter how much I put on me. That flight was so cold. It was insane. I didn't even have my like air on or anything. It was just a very cold flight.
Weird.
And I don't know why.
Interesting.
And I was like literally just like, you know, like when you go to sleep and you wake up and you're like freezing cold and you're like, and even your dreams feel weird.
They're being influenced.
Yeah, they need to change the temp. Like, you know what? Give me a blanket. Like, it's so insane that they're like, no, you have to be on like Delta One and pay $1,000 to get a blanket. I'm like, it costs you $10.
If that, like $10, it would be $10 for the whole plane. I'm sure they get them in bulk. Those planes aren't, those blankets don't even fit your whole body. You need two.
No, and they're essentially little rags.
Yeah.
They're the kind of planes that if you die, they'll just cover your head with it. You know, that kind of
thing. Exactly.
That's their purpose.
Yeah, it's like, when exactly, you know, it's like, did they just start taking away these little things? It used to always be a blanket in your seat when you got to your seat. It used to be headphones automatic. And it was just like, what the airlines think cutting out those little blankies and like cheap headphones is going to bring them millions and billions of dollars. Please.
You're not even like getting like giving people food. Like, here's the thing. This is such an American airline thing, by the way. Like any other airline that you take, like Turkish Airlines, Egyptian Airlines, whatever, you get a real meal. You get food. They give you chicken or something. If I see one more Biscoff or whatever that is.
Oh, don't talk. I love a Biscoff now.
But it's not a meal.
Kiki turned on your fight.
It is not a meal, though. It's not a meal. That's all I'm saying.
But I asked for extras.
Yes.
And it's
just, I love the little, you know, the Southwest pretzel and crispy salty bits bag with the brownie brittle. I asked for extras, too.
Oh, I've never been on Southwest, but... Yeah, I definitely get the only get the wrap if you're going over like 5 hours. So if you're going across country, then you might get that wrap. And it's always a turkey wrap. I hate turkey. It's like not real.
We should cut this on the podcast and make it like a social and do not explain the context. And it's just Kiki saying, I hate turkey. And our Turkish listeners are just going to lose their minds.
I'm Sorry is a Lemonada Media original. The show is produced by Alex McCohen. Supervising producer is Chrissy Pease. Our executive producers are Stephanie Whittles-Wax and Jessica Cordova Kramer. Our mix is by Kat Yore, and theme music was composed by Xander Singh. If you like this show, please rate and review. And please don't cancel us. You can find out more about our show at Lemonada Media on all social platforms or follow us on Instagram at @I'mSorry_podcast. We'll be back next week. And until then, be nice, play fair, and always say I'm sorry. Thanks for listening.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Jose Andres. Maybe you know me from my restaurants or maybe from Wall Central Kitchen, the organization I founded to feed people after disasters. Well, it's time for you to know my podcast, Longer Tables. Each episode, I get to know fascinating people in the most intimate way, through food. Stacey Abrams, Jojo Ma, Jane Goodall, Padma Lakshmi. I will answer questions from listeners too. Join me in building longer tables, not higher walls, whatever you get your podcasts.
Hey friends, it's Meghan Trainor.
And her big bro, Ryan Trainor.
And her husband, Daryl Sabara.
Each week on our podcast, Working On It, we share behind-the-scenes stories and bring you into our hilarious and heartfelt conversations, and sometimes with amazing guests.
We tackle everything from navigating Hollywood to mental health to Meghan becoming a mother, Daryl becoming a father, and so much more.
We'll get into the nitty-gritty of our lives and leave no detail behind. Prepare to laugh, cry, and hopefully learn something new.
Listen to new episodes out every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.